Good afternoon and welcome to Saturday with Cormac O'Hara. 1st of January or not, now GPs voice concerns about abortion service readiness for the new year. And thousands of police, hundreds of arrests already. We tracked a partial shutdown of Paris as protesters rail against their standard of living. That and more, but first news, read by Christopher McKevitt. Gurmila Mogath, Christopher, you're welcome back to the programme. I'm joined by Hildegard Nocton of Fine Gael, John Lahart of Fianna Fáil, Róisín Shortall, co-leader of the Social Democrats and TD for Dublin North West. Padraig Tobin is an independent TD in Meath West, and Dr. Vicky Conway is Associate Professor at the Department of Law and Government at DCU. 51551 if you want to get in contact with the programme. Just 3 weeks to go before the introduction of abortion services in this country, and there's still some disagreement about what shape the service should take. Ructions in Parliament during the week about changes to the bill, and that's still going through the Seanad. Disquiet too about how ready the Irish Health Service is to provide abortion as envisaged by the government on the 1st of January. I'm talking about the intervention by Professor Chris Fitzpatrick during the week, largely dismissed by the likes of Peter Boylan. But we have a copy today of a letter that was sent last night from the Irish College of General Practitioners to the Minister for Health, Simon Harris, in relation to abortion services from the 1st of January. Now, I'll open this up to the panel, and I'll ask you, Hildegard Nocton, your opinion, and all of the panel in just a second. But just to let people know, they say that they've written to the Minister today, which is last night, expressing strong concerns about the planned implementation of the bill as envisaged, starting from the 1st of January. They're demanding clarification and further detail on free, accessible, immediate ultrasound services, whether they'll be available and where. They say GPs have want full information as to which services are in place, operational and accessible in their areas. They want information in relation to the 24-hour helpline about aftercare and so on. They say if this information isn't provided, that patient care will be compromised, and they say failure to give this information and to implement this fully will result in providers in the community coping with an unsafe service with potential for adverse events and system failure. How do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, we have to acknowledge that over 66% of the population voted in favour of this legislation, and we as legislators have to ensure that this goes through our Iraq. This is through the Dáil, it's now through the Seanad. Yes, I agree, and we all agree here that there needs to be safe and high quality service provided. We have Dr. Peter Boylan, who's working with the HSE, who is very confident that this service can be rolled out in a safe manner by the 1st of January. And I understand Dr. Rona O'Mahony was on RTE Radio this morning saying that that is possible too. Minister Simon Harris...
Dr. Rona O'Mahony told Marian Finucane, the entire service, I don't think we'll be there, will be the way we would like it to be by the 1st of January, standing from here.
I understand that the Minister, Simon Harris, will be meeting with all the stakeholders on Monday. And many of the GPs who campaigned in favour of this are ready to roll this out. And let me just to reiterate, many of these termination of pregnancies will be under 12 weeks, which will not involve the maternity hospitals. It can be done in the safe practice of a GP surgery.
Which makes the letter that we have today sent from the Irish College of GPs to the Minister all the more relevant. Can you, for example, can you tell them and reassure these GPs or the College that there will be free, readily accessible and immediate ultrasound as deemed clinically needed by the doctor? And can you tell them where those sites will be located?
So at the moment, before this legislation is in, doctors in consultation with women are competently looking at how far along a pregnancy is. And if there is a need for ultrasounds to take place, they can be, if a referral is needed, they can be referred to a maternity hospital. And just to outline, we have 19 maternity hospitals. 14 of those 19 have the provision of ultrasounds. Well, and so, by 2019...
Sorry, I think the GPs, correct me if I'm wrong, say that they were told, they were led to believe, or they have a belief that they will have ultrasound services in GP centres. Am I right or wrong?
No, in the community, but that is coming. That is coming. But if the majority will not need ultrasounds, but if they do, the point is if they do,
where will they be?
They can go to maternity hospitals, or this also, I understand that the HSE is looking at access to that within the community in the short to medium term. In the short to medium term to ensure that it is safe. This is important now, because that letter is raising important questions. And the Minister for Health is meeting with all stakeholders on Monday. You can be sure that if it is rolled out on the 1st of January, that it will be done in a safe and quality manner.
First of all, we're about 20 days away from the start of this particular service, and if you're pro-choice or pro-life, you should be equally concerned with regards to the dangers that are about to happen in this space. The abortion service that will be provided will be as chaotic as the health services that Simon Harris provides at the moment. There are thousands of women on the waiting list currently for ultrasound, for normal maternity services in this country currently. I've spoken to doctors who've told me that three hospitals around the country are not going to participate in this. I've spoken to thousands of doctors, midwives and nurses saying they're not going to participate in this. And not just because of conscientious objection, because they believe that the whole system hasn't got the capacity to actually deal with what the government is throwing into the health service at the moment.
Peter Boylan said yesterday to Sean O'Rourke, the system does have the capacity and has been doing so over the last 5 years.
Exactly. In fairness to Peter Boylan, he also said to the 8th committee that it would be necessary to have community ultrasound services available to be able to provide a proper abortion service. And that's clearly not going to happen at the moment. And we brought about an amendment.
That's not true. We don't know that yet.
They're
looking for clarification.
Well, first of all, I will tell you that there will be no way that the government will be able to provide GP ultrasounds by the 1st of January.
If GPs if GPs feel it is necessary to carry out an ultrasound, it will take place, and that is a commitment by Minister for Health, Simon Harris. It will be through our maternity.
Before anyone else speaks, can I just say, let's not talk over each other, okay?
The legislation as defined is increasing the need for these additional dimensions like ultrasound. So the fact that you have continued criminalisation of doctors if they stray even one day beyond the 12-week limit, the fact that you have a 3-day waiting period, all of that is, none of which is justified. There is no evidential basis for saying this is going to improve the provision of abortion care in this country, and it's only going to make that worse. So there are things within this legislation which could be structured changed, which would reduce the demands on the healthcare system.
And that's a point that GPs have raised with me privately. They say, we're worried about going ahead with this by this date if we don't have proper guidelines as to how...
The guidelines is huge.
Absolutely. And I mean, the guidelines will not be available till next week at the earliest. Now, I mean, there's no excuse for this in my view. There has been a very, very long lead into this. We've known for a very long time that, you know, the likelihood is that the regime is going to change. Since the referendum, then we've had all of the process of the legislation going through, and there was ample time to ensure that the kind of supports that are required would be provided, the guidelines would be set out and so on. Now, I mean, there's an element of resistance to change anyway, I think, when any new service is being introduced.
Anywhere, that's true.
Anywhere. So there's an element of that. And Peter Boylan has said that it's clearly not going to be perfect from the beginning. And fine, it's not going to be perfect from the beginning. And there are always teething problems with any new service coming in. But I have to say that listening to Chris Fitzpatrick yesterday in the comments he made, and also then today in relation to the ICGP, I would have concerns because both the consultants and GPs are raising safety concerns in relation to this. Now, you know, the whole question of ultrasound, there are long waiting lists at the moment. We were promised ultrasound facilities in the community, in primary care centres or fast access in the community. It would appear that they're not there. I mean, I would have assumed that they would have been put in place in ample time for the 1st of January. The ICGP are indicating that they're not there. Now, you know, we need to know, are those basic kind of infrastructural supports going to be available? And there's no excuse for them not there.
And what's more, John Lahart of Fianna Fáil, they're saying quite overtly that if they are not there, and if we don't have further detail on this, that it would be unsafe to proceed. Now, should it be deferred then from the 1st of January to some later date?
Yeah, I mean, as Paula said, we're about 20 days away from it. That's not even including working days. This deadline is the minister's deadline. Fianna Fáil's position on this is that, look, we will be led by clinicians. So in the past, it's not even in the past week, in the past 3 or 4 days, but going back a number of months, but just even in the last 3 or 4 days, as Roisin said, you had Dr. Chris Fitzpatrick talking in the Irish Times, or an article in the Irish Times, Sam Coulter-Smith in a personal capacity, raising a number of issues, not arguing and not attempting, in my view, to obstruct anything, but actually highlighting the issues that need to be addressed in a very patient-centred, woman-centred way, in relation to a number of issues, from training to resources, to the issues that have been raised by the Irish College of General Practitioners.
But you're there
today.
You're there to legislate and help legislate. When you say you're being led by clinicians, there is a divergence of opinion among clinicians, senior clinicians.
Sure.
So what do you do in that respect?
Well, again, when I say being led by clinicians, you know, Fianna Fáil would have met with this group of doctors, the START group of doctors, way, way back, who raised these concerns at the start in terms of, you know, resources being in place, structures being in place, clinicians not being trained. So actually, in that sense, it's going back a long time. Now, it needs to be addressed. There's no political climb down or embarrassment in addressing that. The clinicians didn't put forward the date of the 1st of January.
You're saying it needs to be looked at again, is that right?
Well, I do take Peter Boylan's...
If these are not confirmed, say the ICGP, if these are not confirmed, the points they raise, and in place, then a high-quality, patient-centred service is jeopardised. And patient care will be compromised. Now, proceed on that basis?
What I'm saying is I don't want to politicise it in this sense in terms of criticising the minister, OK? Because from this perspective, you know, the opposition, all opposition parties, we've moved heaven and earth to facilitate the passing of the legislation in terms of passing the bill. We've sat late. We postponed and put off private members' business twice this week. The Dáil has sat incredibly late. The Seanad has sat on days, is sitting on days it doesn't sit. So there's a huge amount of political, you know, goodwill to facilitate the discussion of the bill. What I'm saying from a personal perspective, there's no loss of face on the part of the minister if there are serious clinical concerns being raised about it. And I take your point about that there are also divergent views, but there are serious concerns being raised.
So what are you saying in terms of the start
capacity? Well, we are 20 days ahead, and personally I would have concerns if the College of General Practitioners, who are expressing goodwill towards implementation but have just raised concerns about the possibility of implementing it safely, those concerns I think need to be taken.
First of all, the timescale of this is being dictated by the reputation of the minister. The timescale is purely on political purposes.
On the back of a referendum, in fairness.
Now and the 1st of January.
Right, we have warning lights being flashed currently by doctors, obstetricians, midwives and nurses. Now, we can ignore them here today as they were ignored in the Dáil last week. We brought an amendment forward with regards to ultrasound, and all of the political parties, like a national government, in lockstep, literally trashed that amendment. Amendment that simply sought that there would be ultrasounds available.
Let's not rerun that debate,
hang on. A response from the minister here. We'll get to the amendments and we'll get to the reaction and so on. But allow me, Hildegard, I know you want to get in. Allow me to read this response from the minister in relation to the letter. It remains the minister's absolute commitment to bring in services in January. As referenced by Dr. Peter Boylan yesterday, delays to the service will result in more women having to travel abroad. The minister accepts some medical practitioners are raising genuine concerns, and he's committed to working with them to address those issues. However, the minister's commitment to providing care for women in this country will not waver, he says. He believes there should be no unnecessary delays to the introduction of this service.
And that's the exact point, and that's why I said Minister Simon Harris is meeting on Monday with the stakeholders involved. We have an obligation, despite, and I changed my view on this over the last few months, and that's history now in relation to this. We have an obligation as legislators not to delay this through the Oireachtas. There's two issues here, and I am getting a sense that this letter and all of that may be used by others to delay this through the Oireachtas. I need to finish this point. It's very, very important because this is about women at the end of the day. And the 1st of January, yes, I absolutely agree with those concerns, but they need to be addressed and they will be. And I understand that if a woman presents themselves to a GP from the 1st of January and there's any confusion or lack of clarity, ambiguity around the time frame of that pregnancy, that doctor will have the facility to refer the that woman to get an ultrasound, be it in a maternity hospital or within the community. And that is what is being teased out at the moment. But absolutely, but this has to proceed. So please, let's not rehash the debate about this.
Hang on, this is clarity for doctors.
Yeah,
if a woman, presents 11 weeks and 5 days, what does the doctor do?
That's a grey area. That's where there may be ambiguity, and that's where the doctor has the right to refer to a national maternity hospital to have an ultrasound. Or there's also work. I understand.
Even in the maternity, what does the maternity hospital do?
There's also within the community. There's options within the community to refer as well.
Roisin Shorthall.
They're the questions that we need answered, and they're the questions that clinicians need answered.
But they're the questions to be answered before the bill.
No, not before the bill. No, these are practical measures that need to be put in place, and we need to be given an assurance that all of that preparation is done.
But surely,
that's what we need to hear.
Questions answered by the bill.
Consultation would normally have been done in these scenarios.
Why not by the bill?
The bill sets down the legal basis for change in the regime. Okay, what is the responsibility of the minister is to ensure that the services are in place, including facilities and ultrasound and so on. So, you know, that's the responsibility of the minister. Well, he needs to outline very clearly to clinicians involved in this, both consultants and GPs, that, you know, all of those facilities and services will be in place ready for the 1st of January.
A GP told me during the week, says, what if a woman represents 11 weeks and 5 days and so on? Am I facing prison, said the GP, if I act outside the law?
Yes,
now,
should
that not be answered within the bill?
With all due respect, it's not our business to answer those questions. Mm. And I would expect that the minister and his officials would be in a position to respond to clinicians and to provide that kind
Dr.
of reassurance.
Sorry, I'm going to come in because...
If we don't hear that next week, then that's a matter for you to explain.
You here are the legislators. It is your responsibility to explain why there is a three-day waiting period, which is going to cause so much harm to women. I mean, a woman who lives in a rural area in a controlling relationship who has to go to a doctor, then get a referral for an ultrasound, then go back to her doctor again. That is an impossible situation for many women. The idea of criminalisation, not just of doctors, but we have a section that says that a friend who helps a woman to have an abortion outside of the legislation could face 14 years. I do not understand why legislators are dealing with these provisions.
There were a number of attempts to address those issues in the context of the debate on the legislation, and there was a majority decision taken on those. Now, I mean, that's what democracy is, and that's what we're bound.
Can I turn in just 1 second? I'm going to bring you in, Heather Thobin, because I said at the very start that ructions were caused during the week when this bill went through committees at the Oireachtas. Now, amendments were argued for and I think rejected that more detail and data should be collected on the basis of age and marital status and ethnicity of women and the number of times they had been pregnant before, resulting in live births and stillbirths and so on. Why do you think that data is necessary?
Well, first of all, the British Equality Authority asked in 2001 that data on ethnicity will be collected when abortions are happening. The Guttmacher Institute, which is the research arm of Planned Parenthood, which is obviously a pro-abortion organisation, they research on the basis of ethnicity. Because ignorance doesn't help with regards solving the problems that different ethnic groups face. So, for example, if there are major differences with the incidence of abortions between different ethnic groups, governments can then develop policies which address some of those difficulties. And it is a pro-equality addition with regards the collection of that information. It is information that's collected in Britain, in most European countries, and in countries like New Zealand. But such was the aggression, and such was we had a TD driven to tears in that debate. I was talking to other TDs in that debate who were scared to stand up and speak, because every single time a person from the other side of the debate found a word that they could possibly use as a trigger, they allocated a false motivation to that word. Even though those words were introduced in an effort to build equality into the system, they actually said the opposite was the case. And we had people saying that it was racist. We had people saying that this was from something from South Africa or 1950s southern states in America. The British Equality Authority sought to have ethnicity included in information gathering to help with equality.
Well, Roisin Shorthall, your colleague Catherine Murphy from the Social Democrats said that some of these amendments were not about public health, policy at all. It was about making women feel guilty. Is that the type of stuff that Pallor is complaining
about?
Well,
that was certainly the kind of tone that was being used a lot of the time during the debate. But look, there's no point in rerunning the debate. We had a very, very lengthy debate. Mm-hmm. You know, the legislation has come through as it is now. There were people, you know, Pallor was looking for changes to be made. On the other side, many of us were looking for changes to be made. At the end of the day, there was a democratic decision taken on that legislation, and that's how it stands.
You mean in the referendum?
No, in the Dáil.
Oh, in the Dáil, yeah.
Right, and you know, many of us on both sides of this had amendments down to the legislation. At the end of the day, you know, the decisions were taken on a democratic basis and the legislation went through the Dáil, and it will be going through, I would expect, through the Seanad, essentially, without major change.
But there were efforts to bring about certain democracy.
There is, as you say, there is a process within the Houses of Parliament. There is debate. Sometimes that debate is rambunctious or whatever way you want to characterise it. But then there's a vote.
And sure, but
the decision is taken.
It is possible, Cormac, for people, myself and Roisin have different views on this, and both of us, when we engage in this, are generally respectful on these types of issues. Because I know that Roisin's view on this is generated from her sense of compassion and justice, so as mine. And it is possible to have that debate in a reasonable fashion. But most of the contributions that happened in Leinster House last week were in an effort to actually closed down debate, to shame people who had different views.
Here we are.
Hang on, let him speak.
People were saying that conform. If you don't agree with this, shut up and don't dare bring your views into Leinster House.
John Mahart, you were in.
You had plenty of time.
I chaired about 4.5 hours of the debate. Didn't see a lot of aggression. I mean, I would have taken a view in the
chair. Thomas Burns' aggression.
But I think part of that, Pallor, was it had gone on so long. On both sides, the arguments that were so well rehearsed over the last 6 months continued to be rehearsed ad infinitum. I certainly took the view, you know, look, let people speak to the point of exhaustion, and in a couple of cases, that's exactly what happened. My colleague Billy Kelleher did raise the point, you know, that there is a subtle difference between the matter of conscientious objection and conscientious obstruction. And certainly there were some of the amendments that, in my view, gave the impression they were forcing people to vote no to them, even though essentially the thrust and tenor of what was contained in the amendments was already contained in the legislation.
Well, people who put forward some of the amendments were really annoyed at the Taoiseach, for example, at the accusation of filibustering. Mm. They said they had genuine concerns.
Yeah, well, I would accept that, actually, and that's why I'm saying, I think because of the sensitivity, and I actually made that point in an intervention myself, because of the sensitivity of it, because of the fraughtness of it for some people, that people ought to have been allowed, and they were, speak, and in report stage you can speak really as much as you want.
Oh, I know ye can. I know ye can. Dr. Vicky Conway, before we move on.
On Pallor's point, I mean, there were interventions from the anti-choice side that were certainly disrespectful of women. So, I mean, whatever your complaints, it's not a one-sided thing. But on Roisin's point that this is done, it's through the Dáil, that's not done. I mean, this still has to go through the Seanad. There is still a lot of debate to be had. There's still opportunity for people to contact their senators if they have concerns about any of this. So it's not finished. And these debates need to be had because there are senators that are going to vote on that this week.
My point is they are being had.
Yeah.
And
that
there's ample time being provided for them, for people to express their views.
With the heads of Bill
So they voted on
a particular understanding of what they were voting on.
I really need to take a break. I have 8,000 police lined up in Paris, and apparently hundreds and hundreds of arrests already. Some of them, we're told, preventative arrests. And we're talking about the Paris protests and how it relates to here, possibly, if at all, after the break.
Email saturday@rte.ie. Saturday with Cormac O'Hara on RTE Radio 1.
And welcome to Saturday with Cormac O'Hara. Anyway, we're with Hildegard Nocton of Fine Gael, John Lehart of Fianna Fáil, Roisin Shortall of the Social Democrats, Pallor Tobin, Independent, and Dr. Vicky Conway is of DCU. France is in convulsions, I think it's fair to say. Paris is partly shut down as a result of the Gilets Jaunes protests. We're told that there are 8,000 police officers on the street in Paris, Vicky Conway. There are armoured vehicles and police are stopping and searching people, and over 500 people at this stage, maybe more by now, have been stopped or have been arrested. Stopped and searched and 300 arrested. This is as a result of the carbon tax that was introduced and then rolled back on, and now it's moved on to a whole raft of social problems in France. Not easily allayed, I'd say.
No, I'm sorry.
I mean, this is going to be... We heard the Interior Minister, Castanier, saying, look, no violence whatsoever will be tolerated. But it's not going to be that easy for Macron or the government in France to quell this, because it's leaderless as a protest, and it's right throughout Paris and right throughout the cities of France.
And how the police engage with that is going to be really important. I mean, you can look at the urban riots in England 6 or 7 years ago, and you kind of similar issues there in terms of leaderlessness and stuff. And how that's policed is really important. And the idea of that scale of stop and search and that scale of preventative arrests is somewhat worrying, how policing powers are being used. So that you have to be very careful with that, because that can ignite things even worse if people feel that they're being unfairly treated by the police in those contexts.
And we saw images during the week as well of school children being stopped and searched and put on their knees by police, and it looked extremely...
Aggressive,
yeah, it did.
And France has a history of quite aggressive and violent policing in these moments, which really can just ignite things even further.
What do you think, Roisin Choretal, are the underlying reasons for this type of discontent in France and in Paris?
I think the underlying reasons are a deep sense of alienation by people. And it's not only in France that we're seeing this. I mean, I think there's an element of that in relation to the whole Trump phenomenon. I think there was in relation to Brexit as well. Large numbers of people who are really struggling to survive and feel that they have been abandoned by the establishment, irrespective of what the establishment that is. But in combination with that, what we're seeing is the growth of neoliberalism across Europe. And Macron is being shown up to be a person who very much favours a small state, the introduction of tax breaks for the rich, the forcing out of people from city centres out to suburbs with very few services there, the increase in low-paid work and precarious work, and people really getting to the point where they're saying enough is enough. And that's why people are coming out in the streets. And I think the carbon tax was the final straw for a lot of people who were already being put to the pin of their collar to survive.
So this is going on for decades. We don't have that type of discontent here, do we?
Well, there's a fair bit of it. Mm. I think there's a fair bit of it that we saw expressed in the water campaign. We've seen it expressed as recently as last week in relation to the housing crisis in this country. And there is a huge level of discontent.
But I wonder, because we even had the Taoiseach on the Late Late Show last night. He said openly, look, the housing problem crisis is offensive to me, he says. And he's trying to give tax back to
people. He's the Taoiseach. I mean, what he was doing last night was giving a running commentary on the housing crisis. He's the Taoiseach. Fine Gael have been in government for the last 7 years, and we're still facing a massive housing crisis, which is leaving hundreds of thousands of people behind.
But he's working on it. That's his point.
He's not working on it.
He's not delivering.
And, you know, bear in mind the big idea that he had at the recent Fine Gael Ardèche. His big idea was to cut taxes for the top 20%.
I mean, is Paris comparable to here at all?
Well, I don't think we have... First of all, I totally agree with the right to protest. And I think France is, I suppose, renowned for striking and protests in that light. Now, in relation to the housing crisis, yes, we have a huge crisis ahead of us, in front of us,
and behind, because
it's behind us. That's why we're dealing with it now, and it will take a number of years to address our housing supply. But just in relation to the carbon tax, I'm chair of the Special Committee on Climate Action. It's a 22-member cross-party committee, and we got a lot of criticism in the budget for not introducing a carbon tax. And Pascal Donoghue set out during that budget speech that we need to set out a trajectory for this. And this is also the advice of Professor John Fitzgerald, who is over the Climate Change Advisory Council. And the Climate Change Advisory Council have recommended that we set it at €80 per tonne by 2030. But we need to set out a trajectory in relation to how to get there. But the real concern is, and this comes back to Paris and what's happening in France, is that we do it in a very fair way, so that we are not disenfranchising those who are facing fuel poverty. We, as Minister Richard Bruton says, that we could be a leader on this, as the Citizens Assembly has said as well, and we have, there's a lot of benefits to this,
but
and
more, economic more generally, activity. More generally, you're saying because the way the Fine Gael-led government has governed this country and the economy over the last number of years, there isn't the same discontent here. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying that everybody's happy. I'm not saying that for a second.
First of all, can I say, if you take the future tense out of the language, Fine Gael are left speechless. Because despite the fact they're in government for nearly 8 years, everything they discuss with regards to this is what we're going to do in the future. Right now, there's a hierarchy of needs politically. Feeding your family, putting a roof over your family, getting healthcare for your family and educating your family. Now, we have about 500,000 people in some kind of housing distress at the moment with regards to rents, etc. That's all getting worse currently. We have about 100,000 people who are working full weeks who are in poverty currently, and they're not being dealt with. We have about 750,000 people on waiting lists for hospitals, 2,500 kids who are currently over a year waiting for mental health services. And yet this government, as Roisin states, Leo's big talking point at the Fine Gael Ardèche was how to cut taxes. One of the issues that Macron has done...
35% in the last exit poll that RTE did, 35% are happy with Fine Gael.
Macron reduced unemployment
from 15% down to 5%. You can't do anything unless you get people back to work.
The point that I'm trying to say here is the divisiveness. There are people doing well under Fine Gael, there's no doubt, but the divisiveness in the economy is a problem. Macron and Varadkar are working off exactly the same hymn sheet. They're dividing their countries. One of the first things Macron did was actually to reduce wealth taxes. The big problem in the world at the moment, and it's leading to revolts right across the world, and Trump was a revolt, Brexit was a revolt, we're seeing revolts in different ways, is the fact that we have such wealth starting to concentrate in the hands of so few. So 87% of the wealth of the planet last year concentrated in the hands of 1%. In this country, we saw very recently that 83 people who were have assets of over 50 million euros.
What Fine Gael are doing in government are giving back to working families. That's people who are out working. What's wrong with that pattern? What's wrong with
the people who survive? That's the problem with working families. So many of them can't survive.
We're giving back. We're giving tax back.
Have you heard what the Vincent Fowler saying about the working poor?
Look, we're spending over 20 billion on social welfare benefits.
I did say at the start, don't talk over each other. Yeah. It seems to me that oration by Padraig Tobin there, that speech by Padraig, it could be given by People Before Profit, it could be given by Roisin Shortall, it could be given by Sinn Féin, it could be given by some in Fianna Fáil. And now Padraig wants to start a new party. Why don't the parties in power, in government, in the Dáil at the moment, just do social solidarity and social justice.
I want to make 2 points in the limited time because people had a good run on it. Because the question you asked about was, what's happening in Paris, can it happen here or is it comparable? So first point is this. Roisin raised the point about international convulsions in the UK, Germany from time to time, France, Italy definitely, Spain and the UK. We've avoided it here. The one point you keep missing, this Fine Gael government has 49 seats. Everybody keeps forgetting that. They simply can't govern without having been facilitated. And our facilitation of that for 2.5 years has, to a huge degree, because of the measures that we forced them to implement, progressive budgets as opposed to regressive budgets, and a raft of other measures, has saved this country, given it stability, stabilised at a time when there has been international convulsions. That really needs to be acknowledged. In relation to what's happening in Paris, Hildegard has raised the point. It shows how tricky the whole climate change piece is going to be. It has to be, and we heard a contribution from ICTU during the week at the committee. They talked about just transition. They talked about it in the context of Borden and Bona peat workers who will lose their jobs. But that just transition piece from moving to really radical climate change policies also has to apply to, the older man or woman who relies on a bale of briquettes or oil, who hasn't got 100,000 to retrofit their
house. It must relate to people's lives.
Precisely. But it also must be radical, an education system that works beside them,
and all of the social services. And this is a point that you've made again and again. But the Taoiseach in his Ardaigh speech.
Roisin Shortall.
The Taoiseach also said that only Fine Gael could be trusted on the economy, and that
is a track record.
She's off again. Can I ask this, address this question to Hildegard Nocton and Roisin Shortall. Now, your leader, Leo Varadkar, in his Ardaigh speech said, look, we are going down the road of giving some of the tax back, tax cuts. You say that's not the way to go because it will raise further discontent. Who's right and who's wrong? Let me come to you first.
We're back into auction politics. Yeah. That's the reality of it. And, you know, people aren't going to be fooled by this. If you look back at the last election, 2016, Social Democrats were the only party at the beginning that said, we believe that you should retain the tax base. Don't erode the tax base.
And then
concentrate.
You sat on the sidelines. You wouldn't go into government. You wouldn't participate in facilitating.
What we said is don't erode the tax base. Let's not engage in this kind of auction politics that we had for so many years with Fianna Fáil. So let's invest properly in public services. And let's develop the kind of cohesive society and economy that exists in Northern European countries, in the Nordic countries in particular, where there's a clear understanding that, you know, there's a social contract there. You pay a fair share of taxes according to your ability, and in return you get really good quality public services. And that's the best way to create a successful economy and society, to ensure that we don't widen that gap between rich and poor. But unfortunately, it seems that Fine Gael are going down that road, back into auction politics.
It would be auction politics if, like in the past, we were giving money that we didn't have. We're balancing the budget. Haskell Donoghue.
You're not balancing the budget.
We are. We are balancing the budget. And if you listen to the Taoiseach's speech at the Ardaigh was raising, his proposition is to raise the point at which people enter the higher rate of tax.
Which will do and nothing for 80%
of the give,
population.
It will give people who are out there working every day money back. And in relation
can I tell the politicians on the panel that by God, voters will not vote for you if they can't hear what you're saying.
Sure.
And they are switching off in their droves.
We have a track record of dealing with our economic finances. As I said, we reduced. If you're talking about people being disgruntled, if you want to deal with all of these issues and pay for our public...
Pay for our public services. Who are warned about talking over each other and continue to do it.
Can I make a...
John, do you want to annoy voters?
No, I don't, but I do want to make...
No, I mean, if we want Hildegard to pay for, can I just finish this really brief point?
I'm going to give them an email. Let me read this. While you talk over each other...
Well, I was answering the question.
While you all talk each other down, faith in politics further falls. Not impressive. By God, I'm not impressed. I'm going to go to a break.
Saturday with Cormac O'Hara on RTE Radio 1. Saturday with Cormac O'Hara on RTE Radio 1.
Instructions have been given. We'll try this one more time. Now, Padraig Tobin, you'll all get 30 seconds each. You say, in terms of social justice and delivering it, not all parties are the same.
Now, you mentioned that there's obviously, of the left, people were broadly the same on a lot of the economic issues. And I agree to a certain extent that's true. But one of the things I will say, most of the left-wing parties that exist, while they do talk about economic justice, they're currently far more comfortable talking about the culture wars that are happening in this country. And when I'm talking to people, low and middle income earners at the moment, they're really frustrated that the economic justice issues are being pushed off the top of the priority lists. And the culture wars are being discussed about all the time in Leinster House. And they actually say that it's in Leo's interest. Leo has made himself to be a kind of a shining knight of kind of leafy liberalism. It's in his interest to distract people from these economic issues and not focus on these issues.
Hildegard Nocton.
Absolutely not. And I'm just going to repeat what I was trying to say earlier. The Taoiseach at the Ardaigh has said that his hope is to increase the point at which people start paying the higher rate of tax. And I don't see anything wrong with that. People are going out, working hard day and night, who are trying to provide for their families. And yet this is contingent, can I say, and this is where the responsibility comes in, on outside forces, on what happens with Brexit. So Pascal Donoghue will continue to balance the budget and I think our economy is in safe hands with him. But all of this is contingent on stable governing of our finances.
But Fianna Fáil does it?
Okay, well, first, I've learned from the mistakes of the past. That's the first point. Second point is this. The Irish Fiscal Advisory Council, set up to advise the government in relation to its budgetary policy, said this week that your budget simply is not credible from a whole load of perspectives. And then the final point, because we've little time, in relation to balancing the budget, Pascal has not balanced the budget. He didn't make an allowance for the payment of the Christmas bonus in 2019. That saved him 250 million euros. Now, either in a year's time, people aren't going to get the Christmas bonus, or he was able to squirrel away that 250 million to spend on other things.
He'll talk about further growth.
And just to add to that, I mean, the idea of Fine Gael proposing that they would spend over 3 billion euro in cutting taxes for the top 20%, and there's such a level of unmet need in relation to the housing crisis, the million people on waiting lists for health services, the poor support for childcare, endless issues that need to be dealt with far ahead of that. And
that
it just indicates
in
that Fine Gael really have their priorities wrong.
That's your parting shot. You're leaving a little bit early because you're heading into a protest on the maternity hospital.
That's right,
before you
because
go?
There's still widespread public concern about what is proposed in relation to the new National Maternity Hospital. We need a new hospital urgently, but it's really important that that hospital would be retained in public ownership. I mean, the idea of the government handing over or gifting a valuable asset like that, costing over 300 million euro to a private entity, is just outrageous. And I also think the fact that the proposal is to hand that to a private religious entity,
I heard
a lot
your
of concerns about
by text
ethos.
To Marion Finucan when she had Rona Mahoney.
Yes.
The divestment process apparently has happened.
It hasn't. It hasn't happened. And, you know, several people contacted the show after Rona Mahoney was on. She said that was all sorted. It is not sorted.
No, she said it was in train, if I'm not mistaken.
Well,
I'm
she said initially it had all
I'm
been
I'm
dealt with. But, you know, the Irish Catholic on their front page this week is making the point that for a religious order to divest itself of property, it needs to get the permission
so
of the Vatican.
So you still have concerns,
and that
notwithstanding
hasn't happened.
What was said this morning?
Still have serious concerns. And I think there's a lot of media
Tony
spin
O'Brien
going on over these
happened.
Few days. Mm. And it hasn't.
Can you allay those concerns?
I know that the Minister is very committed to the relocation of the National Maternity Hospital, and I understand that he's going to be reporting to his government colleagues over the coming weeks. So I'm not privy to the ins and outs of that, of what's happening behind the scenes, but I know that it's something that he is taking very seriously.
Okay.
There's a rally on at 2 o'clock at the Spire today.
Okay, you've got the stake in. Okay, Roisin Shortall, thank you very much indeed.
You.
As promised, we're letting you go 5 or 10 minutes early. Can I ask you, Dr. Vicky Conway, sitting very patiently and obediently there, I should say, about Brexit next Tuesday, because the huge vote is, it's B-Day, as a colleague mentioned, it's B-Day, whatever way you want to spell it. What happens if May's deal is rejected? Yes, I'm asking you all the hard questions. You're the legal expert. In terms of what can be...
I'm a policing expert. I'm not
in terms of what can be done, I wonder, what could happen? I mean, there's talk of Jeremy Corbyn, if it's rejected, tabling a motion of no confidence. Now, that would throw the cat among the pigeons. We're into general election territory there, aren't we?
We are, and we're also looking at the impact. I mean, I think there was that really interesting poll from Northern Ireland this week about, you know, what that would lead to in Northern Ireland and the percentage of people that would favour a united Ireland in that perspective. And I think, you know, those concerns would be things that I would be particularly interested in, the idea of the border and how that would be policed. And, you know, there's very fundamental issues around the sovereignty of the UK emerging here, isn't there, with Scotland and Northern Ireland and so on.
Does it bring the backstop if it's rejected on Tuesday, back into play, I wonder?
No, I think our Taoiseach, our Taoiseach and Minister for State, Helen McEntee, have done Trojan work on this, as well as our ambassadors right across Europe, in convincing other European leaders around the importance of this backstop. And we have European support in relation to that. We need to, I suppose, let the UK parliamentarians now do their work. And I think I don't think we should be speculating at this point. I know we're all pretty anxious about it, obviously. We would rather there wasn't a Brexit. This is not our policy. Brexit is UK policy. But we need to hold strong, as we are, and continue to do so on the backstop.
Well, we have to speculate, John Lahart, when we're so close to it, and there's talk of food shortages as well. I mean,
Yeah, I think a contributor to Sean O'Rourke during the week had an interesting analogy for it. He said Brexit has been like one of those storms that you hear about periodically approaching the American coast, and you've all the build up to it, but it actually hasn't hit landfall, is often the language that's used, but it's about to hit landfall this week. Or is it? Because again, we're again in the realm of speculation. If she loses the vote, and then by how much she loses the vote, if she loses it, what will Labour's response to that be? Look, I've always believed, and I've said it many times, we need to take control of the things we can take control of for now. There are different noises coming from government. Taoiseach says there will not be a hard Brexit. Phil Hogan, his European Commissioner, says we need to prepare more intensively and intensely for the possibility of a hard Brexit. Our concern really for the last few months is that the government hasn't been preparing intensively enough for that eventuality, should it, I hope it doesn't, should it arise, but that compared to our European partners, we're not doing anything like as much preparation.
Well, they say they're working behind closed doors, as they say.
Why is Phil Hogan saying that then? You know, kind of saying, look, this needs to be much more industrious and a much more intense preparation for the eventuality.
Well, maybe they're waiting for a second vote, Padraig Tobin. Now, that's in the offing now, isn't it?
Well, I think there's four possible outcomes in this. There's the first one is when the vote is lost next week, that there's maybe a fig leaf or a fudge or a tweak of some sort, maybe a parallel declaration by the EU to seek, can that help? I don't think that's going to get it over the line either. Obviously, you mentioned the possibility of a new election. The Tories are not going to vote for a new election. There's a chance that there would be a hard Brexit. My instinct is that you'll find that the centres of both political parties, if it comes to the cliff edge, will actually come together at some level to vote for a Norway-type Brexit situation. I think that's the... I don't think that people in the centres of those two organisations are going to let it fall over the cliff with regards to that. I think it's interesting that there's nobody in power in Britain at the moment. It's unprecedented that there's actually no government in power in Britain at its most time of need. You mentioned earlier there around, obviously, the Irish government and how they've negotiated the backstop. I actually think that there's an alignment between EU interests and the Irish government currently. The EU, I think, want to frustrate Britain's Brexit to a certain extent. I think they want to make either to stop it or to make the process so difficult that it will prevent anybody else from even thinking about such a thing in the future. And that happens to align with the Irish interest of having a backstop there. But if the government's for real, they need to start looking at a transition to an All-Ireland economy now, and start to make sure that we're focusing on building the All-Ireland economy that has been forgotten about since 1998.
But that's not something you're pushing at all in Fine Gael or in the government. You're saying it's too early to talk about that at all, isn't that right?
Yeah, and can I just talk about our the getting ready, the preparedness for Brexit? Yes, we've done an awful lot of work. 1,100 customs, food security. People have been hired for our ports in Dublin, Rosslare, and at Dublin Airport, as well as the last three budgets have included Brexit ready measures. For example, the €300 million loan with a very low interest for businesses. There's also roadshows taking place. Again, you're interrupting me, John. There's roadshows taking place right across the country with the Taoiseach and the Minister for State, Helen McEntee, meeting businesses and meeting with 12 state agencies. And there's one in NUIG in Galway, and I can tell you there was a Channel 4, the British a British commentator there doing footage of all the supports that were being provided for Irish businesses here, and it was quite alarming for them in relation to how much we are preparing. Now, we can't be 100% ready, we know that. There's a lot of unknowns here, but there is huge amount of work and millions of euro gone into this, and there's more going on behind the scenes that we don't even know about, that cannot be disclosed publicly. So to say that the government are not getting ready as much as we can, look, we all know there's a lot of uncertainty as well. It's very unfair of John to say that.
Yeah. John,
I'm just saying that Phil Hogan... Well, no, I'm not relying an awful lot on it, but he's a European commissioner, OK? He's at the table, and he made the comment in the last 48 hours that the government ought to be preparing much more intensively. No, but he said much more intensively. You mentioned the 1,100 customs.
I know. And food safety.
I know. Micheál Martin has made the point that I think in the Netherlands they have already employed and trained, is it 4,000 of these, going back over a period of time.
And our local enterprise offices are doing that too.
Yeah, and the take up of the Brexit loans has been, risible. In the last year.
So I spoke with
Brexit hasn't happened yet.
I spoke
Brexit
with a supply chain expert actually from DCU during the week about the food shortage allegation. He said, look, it mightn't be a shortage as such, but some commodities might disappear off the shelves in terms of cereals and jams and coffee and so on. So your choice will diminish, he says. And he said, you'll pay more. But he did say as well that in the UK, they're preparing an awful lot. They're publishing technical documents for industry. This is how it's going to work. Not here, he says.
Bord Bia are doing an awful lot of work working with suppliers in relation to this. And again, I say there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes as well that is not being made public for obvious reasons.
Why not?
Because, you know,
it may.
But isn't it good that all this preparation?
Can I just come in there?
We have to let the UK parliamentarians go ahead and make their decision and vote.
Okay,
and we can't be speculating.
The ambition of the government is incredibly low. I did a report into the All-Ireland economy 2 years ago. It was the first report that was carried out in the Oireachtas since partition. I spoke to 100 people from academic backgrounds, from business backgrounds, unions, etc. All of them stated that an All-Ireland economy was the only way to develop here. The government needs to step up to the plate and look at how to integrate both sides of the economy,
okay.
Full stop.
Agus Sin Sin, thank you very much indeed. Pádraig Tobin, Independent, Roisin Shortall, John Le Hart, Hildegard Nocton and Dr. Vicky Conway. Did I leave out John Le Hart? They mention you.
We'll mention me as many times as you wish. Thank you.
That's it. Back next Saturday at 1 o'clock. Slán.
Saturday with Cormac O'Hara was produced by Penny Hart. A.B. Philbin Bowman was on research. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan, and Sheila Neveal was on sound.